lay off the wheel, launch.
Mr. Gonzalez, will you lead us in the pledge, please?
Please join me in the pledge to the United States of America's flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. And the Texas flag. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to the Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
Please be seated. Agenda item number 2.
Roll call, including consideration of whether to excuse absences. Commissioner Cortez.
Present.
Commissioner Sherman.
Present.
Commissioner Jones.
Present.
Commissioner Tall.
Here.
Commissioner Stillman.
Here.
Commissioner Pettis. Present. Commissioner Moore.
Here.
Commissioner Gonzalez.
Here.
Commissioner McMakin.
Present.
Commissioner Dozer.
Dozer. Present.
Commissioner Morgan.
Here.
Commissioner Whitlock. Absent.
She's absent.
Commissioner Anderson.
Here.
One absent, sir.
Chairman, before you go on to the next agenda item, I also wanted to welcome David Gordon this morning. David is serving as our counsel for today in Andrew's place.
Thank you, Tim. Good morning, commissioners.
Welcome. All right. Agenda item number 3.
Adoption of the commission meeting minutes of January 24, 2018 and January 25, 2018.
Move for adoption.
Second. We have a motion, Commissioner Tull, seconded Commissioner Jones, to move for adoption for the minutes of January 24th, 2018 and January 25th, 2018. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Agenda item number 4.
Discussion and possible action regarding the appointment of new commission members to the Budget and Strategic Plan subcommittees.
All right. We in the past, we have had two separate committees, strategic plans and budget committees. I know there was discussion at the last commission meeting on whether to maintain the two separate committees or combine the two committees into one. Is there any further discussion on that? Any thoughts on that?
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Gonzalez?
Just some history. We've always had some difficulties with the two committees actually coming together and meeting. And then when we did, we found that it was necessary to have information from the two separate committees for each individual committee. So I really thought that to make these committees viable and useful, that maybe combining them would give merit to the committee and allow them to have actual substance meetings.
Any other thoughts on that?
Mr. Chairman, I'd be in favor of combining the two committees.
Do we have any opposition on combining? Does that take a form of a motion? Or
I move we combine Budget and Strategic Plan Committee.
We have a
motion
to combine the Strategic Plan Subcommittee and the Budget Committee. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, motion by Commissioner McMakin, second by Commissioner Morgan. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, that just takes an appointment, correct? Okay. I'd like to ask Commissioner Tall if he would be willing to serve as the chair of that committee.
Sure. Be glad to.
I would also ask Commissioner Perez to serve on that committee.
That'd be fine.
Commissioner Doster.
I'd be glad to.
Commissioner Sharma.
Yes.
And Commissioner Stillman.
Yes, sir.
Any further discussion? All right. Thank you very much.
Motion on that?
I don't think so. The chair can just make this.
Agenda item number 5.
Reports from fire service interest groups and agencies on matters relating to organizational purposes, functions, and objectives, including but not limited to the Texas Fire Chiefs Association, the Texas State Association of Firefighters, the State Firemen's and Fire Marshals Association of Texas, the Texas Fire Marshals Association, the Texas Association of Fire Educators, the Texas A&M Forest Service, the National Fire Protection Association, Texas State Association of Fire and Emergency Districts, the Center for Public Safety Excellence, and the State Fire Marshal's Office.
Mr. Chair, can we go back to number 4? Are there anything? The budget is on the pages of your agenda 11 through whatever. And I'm not sure we had anything to discuss on the actual budget. Any overages or?
There's nothing specific to report.
And I don't know.
We're happy to answer any questions that you might have.
If any of the commissioners had any.
Anybody have any questions about the budget? Any discussion?
There are some items that are over. Will those come back in line as the year goes along?
Yes.
That's all I have. Just any of the commissioners want.
I'd like to add that back into the agenda. You can actually put it under 17 under executive director items, but we used to have a report from the budget report. I don't see an agenda placement for a budget report.
Typically would happen during this agenda
correct.
Item, but yeah.
It's kind of not posted that way. So.
No. Yeah.
Any other discussion on budget? All right. We'll continue on with item number 5. Representative from the Texas Chiefs Association.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. I'll be brief. My name is Brent Parker. I currently serve as the president for the Texas Fire Chiefs Association. Betty had a conflict today, so unfortunately I get to give you our update. Just a few upcoming events. We have the Company Fire Officer Symposium in June in Wichita Falls, September in Seguin, and McAllen in November. Our Texas Fire Chiefs Academy is in June in Georgetown and again in October in Garland. Our EMS Chiefs Update, which is a change. We used to have an EMS Chiefs Academy, and we've made a decision to just provide a 3-day update during the Texas Fire Chiefs Academy. It'll run the same time in June in Georgetown and respectively in Garland in October. Our next board meeting is in July in College Station. We'll have the 4th annual Line of Duty Death Conference in Hearst in October, and our Texas Fire Chiefs Workshop is in December. We're also taking this opportunity to establish our legislative priorities during this off year and begin working on those. Those priorities include career-ending injuries, PTSD, mental health, state fire response agency, TIFMAS funding, residential sprinklers, guns, and the revenue caps. We did pass at our annual business meeting back in at our conference a dues increase, which puts us in line with the Texas Police Chiefs Association and the Texas City Management Association. And lastly, we still are highly engaged in our best practices program. We currently have 16 departments that are recognized throughout the state. The third edition was published earlier this week, and on the website are sample policies and proofs. And, you know, the big thing we encourage everybody, whether you're going to officially become a recognized department or not, all that information is free, and we encourage everybody to download that information and at least go through it for your department, just so that you can be the best that you can be as an organization. So I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Texas State Association of Firefighters.
Glenn DeShields, Legislative Director for the State Association of Firefighters. Don't have very much going on right now. We're entering summer. We're starting to work on a bunch of legislative stuff. We just got done with a week-long leadership seminar in Conroe that I think we had about 150 usually leaders and from all our locals around the state that all met down there for a week-long classes, everything. It was a pretty intensive deal. Other than that, we're just going into basically legislative mode. I want to thank everybody that was on the committee to study clean gear and stuff like that. I think we came up with something good that everybody can kind of work with. So hopefully later on everybody is favorable to that. Other than that, that's all I got. Thanks.
Thank you. Texas State Firemen's and Fire Marshals Association of Texas. Texas Fire Marshal's Office.
Morning, Commissioners. Good to be back. As far as the State Fire Marshal Office, you know, one of the biggest responsibilities we have is, it's a great state law, and I'm biased and take it for what it's worth, but reviewing line of duty deaths of firefighters that make the ultimate sacrifice. We still have majority of our deaths each year are cardiac related. Certainly we know the cancer issue is big, but we know that issue is develops over time, and the challenge of identifying that it was job related and takes additional steps. But certainly one of the latest large investigations we did was when we had a San Antonio firefighter killed last year. Myself, working with Chief Hood, did a presentation at the executive conference of the Texas Fire Chiefs Association this past February, and went well. In the context, I applaud the San Antonio Fire Department. They've embraced the findings in the report, and they have a good plan of action of how to deal with those findings that were identified. It's a tough report to read. As the State Fire Marshal Office, working with our partners across the Texas Fire Service that assist us, and in this case, being a metropolitan fire department, we have all the metro departments in the state have a rotation to assist us. Looking at this case, it was Houston Fire Department assisted on the San Antonio investigation, so certainly appreciate their help with that. And it's a report. If you haven't read it, it's on our website, as with all the other reports that we've done since 2001, ironically, when I was chief in Houston and we had the Four Leaf Tower Fire. That was the first report that the State Fire Marshal Office did. And so all those reports from that point forward, and unfortunately, we keep on having the same findings time and time again. And so we appreciate the work that the Fire Commission does with your rules and certifications and all those. Those help minimize our risk exposure. But as you all know, we have much more work to do. We're going to be going around the state highlighting some of the latest firefighter fatality investigations. And so just to remind firefighters in the different regions of the state that we have these common issues and we have to overcome them. And certainly y'all represent different organizations organizations working hard on that. I look at Chief Moore here as chair with TEKS and all their training efforts, and it helps. But fire is everyone's fight, as we say more so for fire safety education, but in this case for the fire service, to make sure that our firefighters go home at the end of their shift, which is our primary mission. And certainly the State Fire Marshal Office, we take that responsibility very seriously, and our reports are well regarded in the American Fire Service, and you can count on us that we'll continue to be very diligent with that sacred duty to make sure that we're taking care of recognizing the challenges that we face and encouraging the fire service to keep on going forward so we don't, again, have these same issues pop up time and time and time again. So with that, I appreciate the opportunity to come.
I have a question.
Hello? Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman. Can I call you Chief?
You can call. I've been called much worse. So it's yeah.
I was wanting to know, you talk about the deaths, firefighter deaths. Do you have a benevolent fund that's associated with that?
Not
as far as our fallen firefighters?
Not the State Fire Marshal's Office. Certainly the National Fallen Firefighter Foundation from a national perspective. And they play a leading role in helping support the families of those firefighters. Certainly, yeah, the Texas LOD group that provides direct support to families is kind of a private organization that they have been very helpful. And we work with them during our investigations, quite frankly, to make sure that the family members are, and not so much about us making sure they do their job, it's just to assist them where we can in our role as doing the investigation. But we have a great relationship with them, and we're big fans of the work that they do here in the state. And they stick around, quite frankly, and we've worked with them even trying to make sure that the firefighters get their benefits through ERS here in the state. So our reports are very helpful in that regard, and so we do follow through to make sure that no one drops in the cracks, because the families are challenged trying to navigate the bureaucracy, if you will. And so the Texas LODD group, they play a big role, and I can't say enough good things about them in that regard. And certainly, you know, the state firefighters and other associations in the state help their members, as you will, that have made that ultimate sacrifice, State Firefighters, Fire Marshal Association, what have you, that you know, we all work collectively together to do what we can to help that family that's has such a great loss.
Thank you.
But yes, sir, Commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else? Okay. Thank you.
Texas Fire Marshals Association. Texas Association of Fire Educators.
Commissioners, good morning. My name is Vince Abrego. I'm the past vice president of the Texas Association of Fire Educators. I'd like to give a little update. The first week of April, we held our TAFE conference in Nassau Bay. They're around Houston. We had 97 registered. We had 25 vendors. We had some very good presentations. We awarded two awards, the Instructor of the Year and the Training Officer. The George Hughes Instructor of the Year went to Jordan Winner from Genesis Incorporated. And the Training Officer of the Year went to, the Earl Malone Training Officer of the Year went to Bill Pearson from Tarrant County College. We're looking forward to next year's conference, which is going to be held in February, and the location is to be determined. So. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Texas A&M Forest Service.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Jimmy Mullis. I'm Assistant Chief with the Texas A&M Forest Service for the Central Branch. Year-to-date, Texas Forest Service has had our winter fire season ongoing within the Panhandle, the West, and the Northwest Branch. We've had 37 departments deploy throughout the state for TIFMAS to support those resources in there. Year-to-date, there's been 3,550 fires reported with 199,000 acres consumed. Now, homes saved are 6,379, and 45 have been lost. We did establish the command post in the Abilene District area to support those resources throughout the West and the Panhandle Branch. We did have to order in some out-of-state resources that supplemented some of our qualifications within the response that was ongoing. The FMAG, or the Fire Management Assistant Grant, thresholds have been met for this year. So far, there have been four fires submitted for the FMAG grant reimbursement, and three of those have been granted. Upcoming, we have the 2018 TIFMA Symposium that will be in College Station. Those dates are May 7th and 8th. With that, that's all I have, unless you have questions. Thank you.
The National Fire Protection Association. Texas State Association of Fire and Emergency Districts. The Center for Public Safety and Excellence.
Good morning. I am Leonard Chan, the current chair of the Center for Public Safety Excellence Texas Consortium. The consortium strives to develop a collaborative relationship among fire departments across the state to achieve excellence through continuous improvement, peer mentoring, and professional development. Earlier in the month, Chief Randy Parr of Tomball and myself attended the state coordinators meeting in Washington, D.C., with 14 other consortiums represented. The Texas Consortium will be hosting a free online Excel tutorial for firefighters on May 15th, which will focus on using words and building lists, because we all know firefighters could use some, a little help there. Our next full-fledged meeting is scheduled in Southlake on the afternoon of August 7th, ahead of Fire Rescue International. Guest speakers will include the chairman of the Commission on Fire Accreditation International, as well as the program director. Frisco and Amarillo are projected to join the list of accredited fire departments during the August hearings. This will bring the list of accredited departments to 8 civilian departments and 3 DOD departments in Texas. I'm willing to field any questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Action item number 6.
Discussion and possible action concerning reports by the commission representative to the Texas Fire School.
One second.
I'm sorry to interrupt. There's somebody here that wanted to speak at the open discussion.
Okay. Public comment posting later.
This who are you? I'm sorry.
That's where they're down.
Yeah.
My name is Stephanie Dreamer. I'm here to speak about one of the NFPA standards.
Anita?
Yes.
Okay, we're gonna talk about that under new matters.
Perfect. Thank you.
Number 6. Discussion and possible action concerning reports by the commission representative to the Texas Fire School Advisory Board and by representatives of the Texas Engineering Extension Service regarding fire protection training provided by TICS through its Emergency Service Training Institute.
I don't see our representative here. If I could, I'll speak on that for just one second. You know, it takes basically what we're doing, just like everybody else. We're trying to get ready for the next legislative session, which not only encompasses the fire school, but it encompasses Texas Task Force 1, the urban search and rescue. That, and then we're also getting ready for the annual July fire schools. That's pretty much it at this point in time. Item number 7.
Discussion and possible action regarding report from the commission representative to the Homeland Security Council.
Commissioner Gonzalez.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I attended the Governor's Homeland Security Council meeting on January 31st. And just to give a background, the Governor's Homeland Security Council is required to meet quarterly. And then, in addition, it is made up of different state agencies across the state of Texas that have some sort of response criteria or input into Homeland Security or any of the planning and updating of Homeland Security activities. Some of the topics that were discussed on January 31st when we met were GridX exercise. There's a lot of activities related to the reports that are provided at these meetings, and a lot of it has to do with different state agencies conducting their exercise, planning and evaluating those exercises, and how the state of Texas recovers from a situation revolving around any type of Homeland Security type event, natural disaster, or man-made disaster. And one of the topics was that ERCOT did, that's our power grid management. They conduct biennial exercise designed to simulate cyber and technology attacks on the electric grid across the state of Texas, and they've done that for several years, but this was a major exercise. They actually combined with about six or seven other states to conduct this exercise because power does not stop at the state line. So ERCOT is the Electrical Reliability Council of Texas, if you don't know what that is. The other reports were the General Land Office on reports of Hurricane Harvey and their activities in that. We also had a couple of other reports from DIR, that's Department of Information Resources for the state of Texas, and their cyber security section, which they boosted their capabilities at Texas DIR, and are offering a lot of different state agencies and local agencies across the state of Texas with some from fraud and organized criminal activity issues related to cybersecurity, advanced personalized threat issues, and issues with any type of hacking, web defacement, management, security type services that they're offering. So DIR is what a lot of local, county, and state agencies utilize for their for a lot of their purchasing activities, but they're now offering some purchasing capabilities for cyber threat protection to local, state, and county government agencies within what their capabilities are, and full-time staff dedicated specifically for cybersecurity related issues. And then lastly, the Texas A&M Animals Disease provided a report to the committee. One of the things that's it's very impressive what the Texas A&M and the Institute for Infectious Animal Disease can do. I mean, they can really track a lot of what capabilities in animals and agriculture and livestock and disease in livestock and agriculture, both in plant and animal. The capabilities to recognize infectious disease, how to prevent, how to quarantine. I mean, there's a lot of activities that are going on, kind of something that we don't really pay attention to, but it could have a major effect on the state of Texas. Economics of the state of Texas, and as well as the health and welfare of the citizens in the state of Texas. So it's really a breath of fresh air to hear the activities and the exercises and the planning that goes in to keeping our citizens safe through agriculture and keeping our economy strong through that the amount of work that they do in this agriculture and animal disease. So with that, Mr. Chairman, that's the end of the report. I'll take any questions.
All right. Item 8.
Item 8. New matters from the commission, staff, or public, which may be discussed in future commission meetings.
Mr. Chairman, I have two items that I'd like to present. Number one is regarding committee members. I am requesting a future agenda item allowing for the discussion and possible action on proposed rule language in Chapter 421. I am asking that we consider new rules pertaining to guidelines for committee membership. I am also asking the presiding officer to appoint two commissioners and two firefighter advisory committee members to develop the proposed rule language and present it for possible discussion and action in the July commission meeting. I have it written out for you, sir.
Okay.
Item number two. Regarding the inspector certification, I'm requesting a future agenda item allowing for discussion, possible action on proposed rule language in Chapter 429, Fire Inspector. I believe the development of a more basic fire inspector certification is, in addition to our current certification, is still a good idea and is supported by a significant number of our stakeholders. I am also asking that a review of the previously proposed language be conducted, and with the idea of crafting and presenting language that satisfies both the needs and the requirements of the various stakeholder groups.
Mr. Chairman, I'd also mention that we do have a letter that had come to us from ICC, the International Code Council. It actually had come to us in January. We actually had it in the January meeting, and we didn't address it at the time in the midst of all the discussion that was occurring about Inspector, but they did actually present some proposed rule language also that they wanted to consider, so that probably be a good time, should it be added to the July agenda, to address this as well on that agenda.
In July, right?
In July, yeah.
Okay, that's the letter you have in front of you from the ICC. All right, so we have two future agenda items. One is the inspector, and another one is new rule language for, I guess, committee participation. Is that what I'm hearing?
Membership
on these committees. Now, part of that was assign two commissioners on to chair a committee.
I think that it would be prudent to have at least two commissioners and two representatives from the president. Firefighter Advisory Committee, and when I speak of committee membership, I'm also talking about the Education Committee. All the commissioners serve a six-year term, and the Firefighter Advisory and Education Committee members serve at the whims of our commission. But, and this is in no way casting any kind of aspersion. They do a fantastic job, and I tip my hat to them. But I think that in lieu of the population growth and changes in the state of Texas and the makeup of the committee, that it would behoove us to do so. As it's presently stated, unless somebody robs a bank or beats their wife on the courthouse square, that nothing has changed in, you know, that's nothing against anybody that has served or is presently serving. It's just that if the commission lives and dies by a six-year term, maximum of two terms, I feel like that it would be prudent for any committee that gives us advice would also need to be recognized. And that would take the burden off of any commissioner that would be reluctant to make a change. They may think about it, but they don't get up and stand it. So from that standpoint, the biggest issue would be if it came to pass, the implementation of it would be the hard part, not, you know, putting a six-year term. The, you know, what's good for the goose would be good for the gander.
Yeah. Is this where I would ask for committee members? Is this where I would assign the committee members?
Is it necessary to make that decision right now?
No, I think what would be appropriate now is to post it for the next meeting agenda. We can have the substantive discussion then, and whatever direction the commission wants to take, they can assign it for a rule change or anything that they want to do after it's been posted at the next meeting.
If I could, I think my understanding of the request was to assign some folks to try to develop some proposed rule language for that next agenda.
Right. That would be appropriate. That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Would you be willing to serve?
Yes, sir.
Do I have another commissioner that would be willing to
serve on?
Okay, Mike, Commissioner Jones, Commissioner McMakin. Chief, would you like to serve on that as an advisory committee member?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll thank you. I want to make sure you talk.
Well, I was looking right at you. Daniel, would you also like to serve on that committee? Yeah, Daniel?
Sure.
Okay. So Daniel Deer, Chief Wisco from the advisory committee, Chief Commissioner McMakin, and say what?
It's kind of like going to Chuck E. Cheese and yelling mom or dad.
Mr. Jones will serve on that committee. I would like for y'all to bring rule language or propose rule language changes to the July meeting.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question. Since we're talking about three different bodies, we only have representation from two of those. Would it not behoove us to have representation from that third committee or from the second committee?
Curriculum and...
Yes, sir. I just feel that's fair since we're going to be talking about the issue that they have representation as well.
I think that would probably be a
good idea.
Chief Deere represents the advisory committee on that committee right now.
Sir?
Chief Deere is our liaison with that committee right now. So he, okay,
but I'll contact
subcommittees.
Pat McAuliffe,
yes.
Who chairs that committee, and get a representative from them also. Okay.
I have a point of clarification, and Tim, would this not still be required to be reviewed by the advisory committee at some point prior to adopting it?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Would we do that prior to the July meeting?
The order of events now is that you would see proposed language up front. It would go to the advisory committee during the interim between your two meetings. So it would get proposed and published. They would review it at the firefighter advisory committee, and it would come to you again with their recommendations.
So it would go to the advisory committee after the July meeting.
Correct.
As published language, then they would review it, come back, and we could final adopt it in October.
Yes, they would come back to you with whatever recommendations they had.
Right. Mr. Chairman, if I'm not able to ask this question, you guys let me know, but I guess I'm a little confused. So we're going to draft this language, but is the commission still has the right to appoint or remove at any time anybody from any of these committees, correct?
That is term limits. According to the rules, yes.
Right, yes. Okay.
But that would also have to be in the proposed new language, correct?
You have, I think the rules already provide for that now.
I do.
Okay. All right. Other new business. I know that Ms. Greenberg would like to come in and speak to you.
So some turkeys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Dr. Anita Greenberg. I would like to begin to speak about NFPA Standard 1006. I believe that because we are in Flash Flood Alley, because we have more swift water rescues than anywhere else in North America, and most importantly, because 20% of the workers' comp payouts to firefighters in this state are going towards swift water training accidents and injuries, that the commission should seriously consider adopting all or part of NFPA Standard 1006. As I'm sure you know, 1006 is specifically about technical rescue. There are multiple chapters in there about swift water rescue. I don't know if the commission is able to adopt specific chapters or if they have to adopt the entire standard. But I would request that the conversation at least begins. I have a letter of support from Mr. Kenneth Larson, who has been part of this community for decades, that I'm hoping I can share, pass along to whomever it needs to be passed along to. And I'm happy to take questions. That's really all I have to say at this point.
Okay, so what you're requesting is that we put a an agenda item on our July meeting to discuss potentially adopting 1006.
Yes, sir.
Through the commission. Anybody have any objections to that?
I do have a question. Would you repeat the percentage of work comp claims that you advised at the opening?
20%. Okay. The only injury that pays out more is hose-related injuries. That statistic, sir, comes from the Texas Insurance Department.
Sure.
All right.
Thank you.
Grab one of those blue scanners.
I did.
Okay, fine.
Okay.
Yeah. I have a new matter, Mr.
Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. This might be a question, I guess, for Tim. I'm hoping this is the right place to bring it up, but I was appointed by the governor to in the public sector, and I was wanting to find out our efforts to reach out to the public as far as our website, Twitter, Facebook, or going on the radio or things like that, just our efforts to go out and reach out to the public. And is that something that we as a body want to tackle, I guess, maybe next in July or something?
We of course have the website. We do have social media that's functioning. In terms of specific outreach to the general public, we really don't have anything specific to that. We haven't up to this point, at least.
As a part of our strategic plan, I think, isn't that one of our provisions in there that we would reach out to the public in a transparent way?
Well, in essence, we're obviously the protection that this commission is charged with is for the general public, and so anything that we can provide, we want to. I think that as it stands now, for instance, our library, we make it pretty well known that all of the material in that library, for instance, is available to anyone, not just fire service people. But again, our outreach up to this point has been somewhat limited. I'm sure a lot of folks don't know that. Could we expand our outreach activities into the general public? Could.
Would that be an agenda item that we would want to
cover? And I think what you're talking about is a pretty big, extensive project to decide how you might want to do that. But I would suggest that as an agenda item at the very least, and perhaps have a group come together to decide how we might want to accomplish it.
Can we place that on the agenda for July, not only in the commission meeting, but also talk about it in the workshop?
In the workshop, sure.
Yes.
Previously.
That would be great. Thank you.
Okay.
Perfect. Thank you, Tim. Mm-hmm.
All right. Any other new matters?
Thank you all for letting me talk today. My name is John Overstreet. I'm the operations officer with the Bexar County Fire Marshal's Office. I'm here about NFPA 1061, which is the NFPA standard for dispatchers, for telecommunicators. We ran into kind of a unique problem. A year or so ago, our HR department sat down with some people and rewrote our telecommunicators career ladder. They didn't consult with us. Part of that career ladder, in order for a dispatcher to move from dispatcher 1, 2, 3, and 4 up the career ladder, they put NFPA 1061 certification in that career ladder. TCFP does not, at this time, recognize that. They also put NFPA 1061 level 1, 2, and 3. There is not even a NFPA 1061 level 3 certification. It's not there. We've tried to go back with our HR department. Our HR department does not want to revisit the issue. So we're, for a while, they said they'll revisit in a couple of years. They just rewrote the job description. So what we're wondering about is the possibility of NFPA 1061, the telecommunicator certification, becoming a certification that we not necessarily mandated, but if a department wished to get their dispatchers that certification, they would be able to do so. In our situation, we've got career dispatchers that are stuck at dispatcher level two, and it'll probably be another 2 years before we can revisit this issue with HR. And this is the only thing holding people up, good people that we want to keep around, from moving up the career ladder. And you know, they're starting to look at other agencies, whether it's law enforcement or fire service. And I know this situation is unique to us, but maybe if there was that certification that was available, then other departments, you know, if you've got a department that's civil service and pays certificate pay, and they get their officers, their firefighters, this another additional level of certification, it might help them out too. So that's what we would like, is just a chance to explore it and see if it's something that's feasible that would work in the state of Texas. We understand that it's not going to work for everybody because you've got smaller agencies that maybe the police department or the sheriff's department dispatches for a volunteer fire department wouldn't apply to them, but maybe if it was a voluntary thing that a dispatcher could get that certification, it might help our people, maybe somebody else.
Is your HR mandating TCFP certification?
Yes, sir,
or
they are.
Just certification?
No, they're mandating TCFP certification. They're mandating state certification, and we don't have it.
How can you do that?
We've addressed it with them. They don't want to revisit the issue. Like I said, there was somebody, they did not consult with anybody from our agency. Basically, what happened was our communications manager, brief history, sat down with the sheriff's office communications manager because HR wanted to go to one job description for both agencies. So they hammered out a document. That document then went to HR, who consulted probably with some national agency, we don't know, and came out with an entirely different document. And there's a lot of strange things in there, but that's the one hurdle that we can't get over. And I know it's our problem. It's not everybody else's problem. But I just was wondering, we were just curious as to whether that was a possibility or something that could be addressed.
Are your dispatchers commissioned firefighters?
No, sir. They're commissioned. They're licensed law enforcement dispatchers, and then they're also our fire and their EMD. They right now they currently dispatch for 30 plus stations.
Can we certify civilians?
Well, we do offer certifications that. You don't have to hold firefighter certification in order to gain, if you will, the
but they're
instructors, for instance. You may have to have some fire service experience to gain instructor certification, but
we do have some of our dispatchers that are also certified as fire inspectors and instructor one level.
Okay.
Not all of them, but some of them.
I want to clarify, this is in Bexar County?
Yes, sir.
And it goes through the fire marshal's office?
Yes, sir. The fire marshal's office handles dispatch for, like I said, about 30 plus different stations to include EMD. We've got a communications division.
And this is the only PSAP in Bexar County that comes in there, or you have multiple PSAPs?
San Antonio has its own PSAP, the city of San Antonio. Bexar County Sheriff's Office handles the sheriff's office and several of the municipalities, and then we also handle the same municipalities that the sheriff's office handles. For instance, the city of Converse just recently decommissioned their dispatch service, and they're contracting with the county now. So we handle the fire and EMS for them, and then the sheriff's department. All our dispatchers are in one PSAP. So a fire dispatcher, one of the fire marshal dispatchers, will be sitting next to one of the SO dispatchers. But our dispatchers will answer 911, and they will take EMD, emergency medical dispatch, and the fire calls.
Are these 911 calls coming in from a different area that
nope.
a sheriff's?
No, sir. They come straight into that PSAP.
two different agencies answering the same call.
HR also wants everybody, this is a whole different issue, but HR also wants, even though they're two separate agencies, HR wants everybody cross-trained so that if a fire dispatcher had a stroke and passed out, one of the sheriff's dispatchers could jump on our radios. But that's a whole different issue. So the sheriff's office actually is also required to have the NFPA 1061.
And after you took a call, might you use a radio to dispatch? Who would you dispatch? A deputy or a fire marshal, assistant fire marshal? Or?
Well, we are a law enforcement officer, so depending on the call, and we actually do, when we're out in the field, we actually do assist the sheriff's office. I've been out on several situations where we've had to, we've assisted the sheriff's department with strictly law enforcement matters. And depending on who I'm talking to, I have the ability in my car to switch over to a sheriff's dispatcher.
I'm on the Harrison County 911 board, and I'm trying to get my head wrapped around all of this.
Yes, we've come in. It's a new animal for us. They've got the Bexar County 911 district that built a big brand new PSAP. The sheriff's office and the fire marshal's office is in there. It's large enough to where it has redundancy with San Antonio's PSAP, so should the cities go down, their dispatchers can migrate to ours, and vice versa, we can migrate to the cities if ours was to go down. So it's a redundant system.
So I guess what we need to decide is, do we want that as a future agenda item to discuss? Is that correct?
I think it would have some merit to at least discuss it maybe between now and July. Let's do some research on authority to regulate or issue certificates, a non-voluntary certificate related to that NFPA standard. And I think the research that I would ask to be done is whether a fire non-law enforcement dispatcher will be required to get a TCOL telecommunicators license from Commissioner of Law Enforcement. If they're not running back, if they're not running NCIC, TCIC, and they're not doing background checks or anything like that, then and they're only doing fire and EMD, then they may not have to be licensed by
our personnel.
I mean, I'm sure they are.
Yes,
but I'm
wondering
if they
are.
Have to be, because that's what telecommunicators is really about, is all the criminal,
Right. Presently, if it's just a fire department and they don't have, arson investigators or cops working for them, I don't believe they have to be certified through TCOL. Actually, if they don't have a law enforcement agency ID, they can't be certified through TCOL.
Right, but they can still dispatch him and answer phone calls. So that might be, there may be some stopgap there, Tim, to research at least and bring back to us your findings whether there's a hole there that TCOL's not filling with a telecommunicator license.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you all.
Thank you.
If I could ask just a couple of questions. So what are they using as their, do you know off the top of your head, what they're using as their standard, so to speak, for the telecommunicator license that these dispatchers would pick up through TCOL? Do you have any idea?
They have to go through all the TCOL training. There's several different classes they have to have, TDTY. They have to have some computer security classes. They have to have the TLETs. It's altogether, I want to say our dispatchers do about 180 hours worth of training.
But there's no relation whatsoever to 1061 when they're doing this training?
No,
sir. So this would be unique to that?
Okay. Yes, sir.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay.
We ready to go to item 9?
Yes.
Item 9, discussion and possible action on future meeting dates.
What do we have, Deb?
I think we've already got them set.
We've already established tentative dates.
July the 11th, the afternoon workshop. July 12th, the full commission meeting.
Do
And then October?
October the 25th.
Repeat that, Deb.
October 25th.
2-5.
Okay, so we currently have a workshop on July the 11th and a commission meeting on July the 12th scheduled. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then we have a commission meeting on October the 25th. Are those dates still good for everyone? Mm-hmm. All right. Stay with those dates. Item 10.
Discussion and possible action on the appointment of a new members to the Firefighter Advisory Committee.
Okay, each of you have a ballot that was passed out this morning. Please take a look. It's place a check mark in the box of your top candidate. If you would, please fill out your ballot and sign it.
Deb, you want to pick them up? She's coming around.
Okay. We'll take it up and tally the votes.
You want all the data, too?
It's too
dramatic. One more. Perhaps take a 5-10 minute break, and we'll tally them for you.
Yeah, we'll take a 5-minute break and come back in.
Come on over. You want to go there?
You'll get there one.
What are you
doing?
Hello.
Everyone's like, dang it, that felt wet.
How are you, sir?
That's my answer. Withdrawal.
Have all been tallied. We have Daniel Anderson is the top vote getter. I'd like to enter. First off, though, I would like to say I want to thank Commissioner Tull, Commissioner Perez, and Commissioner Doster for serving on the committee. We had 53 applicants for the Firefighter Advisory Committee.
And they went through all the applicants, scored them, and came up with five finalists, which we interviewed yesterday. So with that said, I'd like to entertain a motion.
I do have a motion.
Second. Commissioner Tull.
Motion reads that the commissioners appoint Daniel A. Anderson to the Firefighter Advisory Committee. Also, the remaining four finalists will be put on an eligibility list until midnight December 31st, 2018. Should another vacancy occur prior to December 31st, 2018, commissioners will vote from that list. After December 31st, 2018, a new application process will be needed for any further vacancy on the Firefighter Advisory Committee.
Second.
Okay, so we have a motion. Commissioner Tull seconded. Commissioner Perez. Mm-hmm. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Daniel Anderson, y'all will be contacting.
We'll notify.
Notifying Daniel. All right. Item 11.
Matters referred from the Firefighter Advisory Committee, including but not limited to A, discussion and possible final adoption of proposed amendments, new sections, and repeals as follows. 1. Discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 KAC Chapter 427, Training Facility Certification.
Good morning, Commissioners. Mike Wisco, Vice Chairman of the Firefighter Advisory Committee, standing in again for Commissioner or Chairman Reedy. This first one is a lot of grammatical changes brought about by the required rule review.
This is for final adoption.
Yes, I got one question on this. 427.5, page 28.
Yeah. That's the new language for the aerial driver operator area.
On the apparatus?
Yes, sir.
On-site facilities on ladder trucks, it used to say shall be readily available for you.
That was actually from staff. We didn't feel it was necessary to have it there. The fact that it's listed makes it a requirement.
So they can still use AHJ ladder truck. It does not have to belong to the on-site facility.
That's correct. Okay. Yeah, that is the case. Yeah. Yeah, that hasn't changed.
All right. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion by Commissioner Gonzalez, seconded by Commissioner Stillman for approval. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Number two.
11A2, discussion of possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 KAC Chapter 433, driver operator.
Mr. Chairman, this is to add a new section, 433.207, to reflect rules for obtaining our IFSAC seal.
Move for adoption.
Second.
Here we have a motion by Commissioner Tull, seconded by Commissioner Perez to move for adoption. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
11A3, discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 TAC Chapter 453, hazardous materials.
Again, there's a new language, section 453.207, that will put us in line for our IFSAC certification.
So move to approve.
Move for adoption.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Doster, seconded by Commissioner Stillman for a final approval. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Motion carries.
11A4, possible discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to Title 37 TAC, Chapter 457, Minimum Standards for Incident Safety Officer Certification.
New section 457.07 is a rule for obtaining IFSAC certification.
Move for adoption.
Second.
Okay, we got a motion, Commissioner Tull, seconded Commissioner Jones, to move for final adoption. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
11A5, discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 TAC, Chapter 437, fees.
Indeed. In 437.13, the recommended change for the testing fee to be lowered from $85 to $55.
Entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, we got a motion by Commissioner Perez, seconded by Commissioner Stillman.
I have a question.
Discussion.
This is something we had already discussed, right, Tim? We already placed that in the budget?
Yes, sir.
And that's all, okay.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
11B, reports from the Curriculum and Testing Committee with discussion and possible action on recommendations regarding possible changes to the certification curriculum manual as follows. A, reference list for hazard material incident commander curriculum, and B, reference list for hazardous materials technician curriculum.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Daniel DeYeer with the Dallas Fire Rescue. I serve as the Secretary on the Firefighter Advisory Committee, and I also serve on the Curriculum and Testing Committee. These are the only two issues we have to bring you to today, A and B. It's simply just deleting these reference materials from the required reference list. This book is actually out of print, and it's become expensive and difficult to obtain. So we're just looking for you guys to approve that this morning.
So moved. Second.
Okay, we have a motion by
Commissioner Anderson.
Commissioner Anderson, seconded by Commissioner Stillman.
I got a question. Okay. We're removing the reference material, but that does not affect the curriculum in any way. It can be covered by other reference material.
I believe that is correct. I'd have to defer to Grace, but yes, that was the impression that any questions or reference material that would come from those books would be adjusted in the curriculum.
Okay. At a later date?
Correct. We're asking also that you guys do this immediately, but you could put a different date on it if you wanted to.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, I have one more issue from our committee, if you'll allow me. I have a letter I've been asked to read by Chairman Reedy to you all. It won't take very long, and I practiced my grammar speaking last night. So, Commissioners, thank you for allowing this statement to be read into the record by my good friend Mike Wisco. I'm sorry that I'm not there, but I'm speaking at FDIC this week. It's a great honor and privilege to serve as the chairman of the Firefighter Advisory Committee. Being chairman of this committee is so much more than just a title. There's a significant amount of time and involvement necessary to do justice to the important task and responsibilities that come with such an important position. However, most important job I currently have is being a parent for my daughter. Nothing is more important to me. Having said that, the sizable responsibility and focus of being a single parent, along with the amount of time necessary as a function of my new position in the San Antonio Fire Department Safety Division, have greatly impacted my ability to give the chairman's position the time and attention needed. To that end, I will step down as chairman of the Firefighter Advisory Committee as of the end of the June Firefighter Advisory Committee meeting. I will still serve the firefighters and citizens of our state as a member of the committee as long as needed or until the glorious day that I get to retire. Respectfully, Lieutenant Jim Reed.
Okay.
Giving a copy of the letter to Deborah.
Yes, yeah, please. I guess with that said, at the end of the meeting, once it... We're going to need to go through a nomination or election process again for the chairman position.
Okay. We'll put that at the end of our meeting agenda for June.
Put that at the end of the June meeting agenda, please.
Thank you. That's all I have, unless there's any questions for us.
That would be on our...
Not our
agenda
not
for
our,
no, it's no not what our, about July though?
It'll be on there.
What about our July meeting?
They will come in and announce the results of the election.
Whoever the new chairman is will be standing here in front of you.
No, he's talking.
We don't picked their own
eligibility list to vote again in July to place somebody
yes.
in.
We will at that point. Well,
he's not on my agenda.
He's just resigning as chair. No. He's not resigning as committee member.
He wishes to remain on the committee, just not as the chairman.
I understand.
Okay.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
All right. Number 12.
Item 12, discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 TAC Chapter 433, driver operator.
Commissioners, this is for publication. We're essentially just removing the special provision, the one-year provision that would allow people to take the driver operator aerial exam. Again, the provision expires May 18th, so in a change from our normal procedures, we're actually working ahead a little bit here so that by July, we will be able to remove this completely.
This item will be on the agenda for the Firefighter Advisory Committee also, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Move for publication.
Okay, move for publication.
Second.
Commissioner Tall seconded. Commissioner Gonzalez. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 13.
13, discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 TAC Chapter 435, firefighter safety.
For publication.
So moved.
Second.
We got a motion. Who made the motion?
Tommy? Mr. Anderson.
Commissioner Anderson, seconded. Commissioner Tall. Any discussion?
Well, I think that it probably wouldn't hurt for y'all to know just as part of your decision-making process. Staff looked at it just to see how we might be able to manage this. It's not a problem at all managing this on our end. This one, I think, to some degree, the way it's written, does depart a little bit from our norm in that from what we've been able to see from our review, the proposed language here is really, for the most part, a restating
right.
of some information that's already in the NFPA standard, which is adopted
correct.
By this commission. So it creates kind of an unusual situation in that we've pulled something specifically out of the standard, and we're now specifying it in the rules. Again, not necessarily a problem, although things like that could in the future create potential
potential conflicts if they change the standard and we're not looking at it in the rule, changing the rules. So just to make you all aware that this is a bit of a precedent-setting thing in terms of what we're doing here. You've already adopted 1851. One of the things that our compliance folks do all now is they do work from checklists when they go do an inspection. One option, obviously, could be to ensure, for instance, on our developed checklist that we look for these things. Obviously, if you're going to establish it in the rules, we obviously would. We could do that anyway. If you were to direct that we needed to make sure we did, we could do that even if it wasn't specified here in the rules like it is. But again, either way, we can implement. But I wanted to make you all aware that we are creating kind of a different situation here by doing what we're doing.
What would you prefer?
It's not really what I would prefer. It's what y'all would prefer. Again, we can implement it either way. If you were to direct to us to ensure, for instance, that these items specifically were on our compliance officers' checklists when they go do an inspection, that's quite easy to do. Whether it's established in the rules specifically here or not, we can do that. I can direct compliance to do that. It's really, really not a big thing. Again, I think that would be my only concern, is that we're doing something here a bit unusual in that we're drawing out of a standard that you've already adopted, and you're placing some specifics out of that standard into the rule, and so you're kind of repeating what's already there. But at the same time, I understand the concern. I know that we want to make sure that we're checking the things we need to check, and that there's real concern about checking specifics when our guys go do inspections. So, anyway.
Okay. Discussion?
Yeah. I got a question for basically legal. Even though we have adopted NFPA, just to say any NFPA standard, and it's legislated that we adopt that, is there anything that prevents us from making a rule change in the interest of firefighter safety or public safety that's more stringent than the NFPA standard?
Not unless the statute says you are forced to do that. No, otherwise no.
So by putting this in the rules, we're just emphasizing the need for departments or individuals to make sure they do this.
Yeah, and again, based on what we could see, at least with our review, in essence, you're not asking for more than what the standard says now. You're simply restating some information that's already in the standard. Mm-hmm. That's what we saw. Now, y'all correct me if we've missed something as we reviewed it, but that was kind of what I was seeing. So I don't know that you're creating requirements over and above the NFPA standard. I don't think we're doing that. You're just emphasizing specifics out of that standard, which is unusual compared to what we've done in the past.
I have a question as well, but I'll yield to Mr. DeShields if you want to
follow up on that. If we publish this and comment comes to the advisory committee or to this commission for more stringent cleaning, inspection, we would not have a problem with that if, as long as statute does not prevent that.
That's correct.
In fact, I think the only thing that statute, I'd have to go back to be sure, I think the only thing statute says is that you can't adopt anything less stringent than the standard. You can always do more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Chair recognizes Mr. DeShields.
Okay, Glenn DeShields, Legislative Director with Texas State Association of Firefighters. Our main thing is, we went with a bunch of departments talking to them, figuring out how they wanted to do it. And originally, I think the genesis of this was two sets of gear, and then we realized that, you know, it could impose a big cost on a lot of departments. And then people have gotten confused and saying, well, this means there's going to be extractors in each station. That is absolutely false. What this does is currently
currently under rule, upon request by the commission, they, a city or a department, a regulated department, would have to provide the plan, I guess, to make sure they comply with NFPA 1851. That's upon request. There's nothing really that says they have to comply with it, I guess so. But there's, it says which complies, but no one's doing it right now. If you look at, well, there is multiple departments, but big departments, the biggest in the state, is not complying with NFPA 1851 at all. I mean, there's one time, the only cleaning they're getting is so their gear can be inspected. That's the only, I think Marty could probably back me up on that. Our major issue is the fact that, first of all, they're not complying with these plans, and if or they don't have a plan, and if they have to maintain and provide to the commission and comply with a departmental standard operating procedure, which Longview showed us theirs, Austin showed us theirs, they all had very reasonable procedures, and they didn't say it was prohibitive on cost or anything. We think Houston should provide one, and it should be available to the people that are actually the regulated firefighters that it's designed to protect. I don't know if it would cause any conflict with a change in NFPA 1851, other than, I mean, the stuff we say in here is basically that, you know, it's on the firefighter to perform the routine inspection and the spot clean. Now, if there's some big change in that we need to, that comes out in the new NFPA 1851 rule, which I think is next year, or I don't know when it's going to happen.
Pretty quick.
Yeah, maybe next year. I guess we could go back and change it, but I don't see anything in this rule that would, you know, we left it pretty broad in allowing a city or a department or a ESD or whatever, a regulated department, to go do what they need to do to comply with NFPA 1851. We did not want to put them in a box and say, you have to have two sets of gear. You have to have extractors. Because there's pitfalls to all those. Two sets of gear costs a lot of money. Extractors, you can get the guy who washes his gear every time and ruins it and it's done in a year. So we wanted to have them set protocols that are sane, cheap, work well, and provide compliance with 1851. But I can answer any questions about it. I mean, we've been working on this for years.
And I do want to clarify, I'm certainly not discouraging this. I was just wanting to provide some additional information. And I agree with Glenn. In all likelihood, I can't imagine that there would be, I mean, I suppose a future NFPA edition revision could create a conflict with what's here, but I'd say that's not real likely. And we obviously would need to bring, if you adopt this, we would simply need to make sure it's still okay, still comports with the standard, and make whatever change we need to. So,
a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Two questions. And when you, on the language change to maintain, provide to the commission, is that the staff's intent to require department to submit their SOP related to this topic to you guys instead of upon request?
I did want to clarify that. Staff didn't do anything with this language here. I think this came out of your committee that did this. This would require a department to provide that to us, not simply upon request. They would be required, as it's written now, to provide that to us, and we would have to decide how we want that to occur. You know, whether we would want to set up a schedule or notify all departments to have them submit those to us so that we can look at them, or if we would look at them during an inspection, whatever it might be. But this does remove that by request, no doubt.
So, I mean, the way I read it is you'd have to submit it once it was completed, however you did it, by email, upload it to FIDO, I don't know.
Yeah.
So that was one question. Then on Section C, 3C, it talks about the requirements that fire departments provide a means for cleaning and decontaminating protective clothing. In your understanding, the word means, as far as the commission, the commission inspectors are concerned, that could be, means would include a contract, maybe mutual aid from another station or multiple stations, whatever it may be. Or just, what is your understanding of the word means? They're just providing it somehow in the plan. how they're going to do it.
In terms of how we would implement that language, yes. I think that provides a substantial amount of leeway for departments to decide how they're going to go about doing it.
Mr. Chairman. Any further discussion?
So I actually was able to the chair of the committee, and the committee consists of myself, Chief Steelman, Mollis Harmon, Marty Langton from Houston Firefighter Association, Thayer Smith from Austin Fire Department, and Ariana Hargrove from the Texas Fire Marshal Association. So we try to get all players in. And a lot of the key points we went over is, just, as we know, the growing number of cancers in firefighters. So just to give you some numbers for home, well, so for nationwide off the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, when I went to their symposium, firefighters are 9% higher at risk of contracting cancer and 14% higher of death rates. So, for instance, like I said, with Houston, to some of their numbers, they have 6 active cases, 5 last year, and 9 active cases of retired or active guys that have passed. So, there's a lot of national standards in there, like with the NFPA, after you have a fire, gross decon on scene, wiping down, bagging your PPE on scene, putting in a different compartment outside of the cab. A lot of your trucks now are going to, instead of the cloth seats, to the vinyl. So it's a growing number of what we're finding. We have one of the highest skin cancer rates. And so that was the gist of the concern of the committee that was to draft this language. And again, like DeShiel said, it puts it on the firefighter to notify in that. But just, like I said, 1851's out there, but they're just providing an SOP. And this is just, I think, gives a little teeth to make sure that we are setting precedents that not only do you just provide the SOP and that's good enough, okay, you have it, but that you will actually comply with to give guys an opportunity to respond in clean gear, whatever means that would be. So that was just that's who was on the committee and the gist of the committee, and this is just it's pretty passionate. Like I said, I went out to Pasadena and California for the Firefighter Cancer Network, and then to stare down some people that have family members have lost due to an impact, as well as the impact on personnel that this is affecting. I mean, this is I think this is something to definitely take serious, and I would ask for support from the commission to publish this to see if we can go with it.
Thanks, Colin. One more comment.
Tim, based off of, and thank you, Commissioner Jones, for chairing that committee, an excellent report. But I would ask that if you could look at, before we final adopt this in July, I'd like to see something maybe from you related to, a rule is only as good as how we regulate it. And I'd like some kind of a plan of regulation related to this documentation presented to us in July. Just to say, hey, this is what our plan is to move forward. If there's a fiscal note to that, it's going to require additional staff or additional duties for staff to be able to review these plans, make sure they're in compliance if they're submitted, or inspections and field inspections. So just some kind of a executive brief on how you look to see how this would move forward in the future.
Okay. Okay.
Call for the question.
Okay. Question. Are all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Okay. Motion for publication.
Mr. Chairman, just want to be very brief and wanted to thank the commission for putting the committee together, taking the time to focus on this. Thank you, Commissioner Jones, for heading that up. And just wanted you to know that our association in Houston is committed to helping, and we have started to implement through the association, through our own members' dues, things in order to make this a priority. I think that what this does is highlight, at least I can speak for Houston, make it a priority, and I think that Austin and a handful of others that have already created a proactive strategy have done a great job. So I just want to say thank you.
Okay, thank you. Motion carried for publication. Item 15.
14, discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 TAC Chapter 439, examinations for certification.
Commissioners, this chapter you had actually already
final adopted that fee change previously. Now you're looking at some proposals for some rule changes that are based on, again, that our periodic review that we have to do. So the idea was to clarify some language that was in here or update language. I don't have anything specific to point out, but I'm happy to answer any questions if I can.
Move for publication.
Second.
Okay, Commissioner Tall, seconded by Commissioner Perez. Move for publication. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Item 15, discussion and possible action regarding the addition of classes or courses to the A list and B list for higher levels of certification.
I'm not sure. It's probably been a while since we've done any A and B list courses. For those commissioners who may not be familiar with this, if I could, just a very quick update on what these are. A and B list courses are used by personnel who have completed these courses as training credit to move to a higher level of certification, from basic to intermediate, from intermediate to advanced certification. We've got a pretty extensive list already on the website of both A and B list courses. What we try to do is we'll periodically review our major training providers, NFA, TEKS, and see if they've got any courses that they've added that we might want to look at adding to our list. And so that's what you see here.
On the traffic incident management course added to B list, Tim, wasn't that a mandated course already?
Well, here we're just simply giving credit as a B-list course, yes. So everybody should automatically get a B-list course.
All right. Question. How many courses do you have to take in A compared to the B?
You would do 2 A-list courses could do it. 8 B-list courses. You could do 1 A and 4 B list courses. So there are different combinations that you could do.
Yeah, I just the relevancy of the numbers just don't add up. That's why I was asking.
As far as?
For example, your A list here is 4840. You take 2, that's 96 hours. You take 8 of 4, it's 32 hours.
And essentially, the way it's been managed since before I was here, courses that are 40 or more hours in length would be considered an A-list course. Anything less than 40 hours would be considered a B-list course. So you actually have B-list courses that are upwards of 30 hours, you could.
I guess that's my only heartache.
Having such short courses? Yeah. We want to be kind of careful not to have too many short courses there, but no, I understand your concern, though.
All right. Any further discussion? Do we have a motion on the floor on this? I don't think so.
I believe you do.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion. Commissioner Doster, seconded Commissioner Jones.
Mr. Anderson.
Anderson. Excuse me.
These wouldn't come back to you a second time, so this would be just an adoption.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
One opposite, one opposed. Motion carries.
Item 16, discussion of possible action on request from Chief Danny Kistner regarding the appointment of an ad hoc committee on health and wellness.
Mr. Chairman, Chief Kistner had contacted us yesterday, said he had an unexpected complication come up and he wouldn't be able to be here to present on this. He has asked that we table this one to the July meeting, if we would.
Move we table.
All right, we have a motion.
Second.
This time, Commissioner Dawson.
Mm-hmm.
Seconded Commissioner Tall to table item 16 until July meeting. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Item 17, discussion and possible action on matters from the Executive Director. A, decisions of the Executive Director in contested cases and consent orders.
Commissioners, nothing to report here.
Good.
All okay on the home front?
At least with that respect.
17B, status of division functions.
You've got a bit of an overview there with some reports from the various sections. A couple of quick items. Testing volume is through the roof.
Awesome.
We are at all-time highs for testing, and it is across the board. It is not in any one particular discipline, although we have a mad rush right now. You all approved some language to remove that special provision for testing for the aerial apparatus driver come May 18th. There's a mad rush for that one, no doubt about it, so we've got a lot of folks testing in that. But again, the testing right now is just across the board. We are launching our online testing starting next Tuesday, May 1st. We're going to launch it with just a few disciplines. We're doing a bit of final testing right now, actually, with the testing centers to make sure things are working correctly. But we'll begin with just a few disciplines. As soon as we see that things are working fine, then we'll open the door. We'll begin opening the door and include more disciplines, and we'll certainly open that door as quickly as we can. So we're excited about that, and I know that everybody out there is. Long in coming.
Quick question.
Yes, sir.
So since we've implemented this fee change, when does it actually take effect?
It will go to the it'll be reviewed by council. It'll go to the register, and it's effective 20 days after the register receives it. So council will do one final check to make sure there's nothing there that's running afoul of the statute. We send it to the Texas Register. Once Texas Register indicates they've received it, then we know it's effective 20 days later. So about 30 days.
Okay.
After today.
Tim, with all this new traffic, our system's able to handle it?
No issues
with the computer system?
Well, we actually went ahead and put in a request to DIR to upgrade our bandwidth. Mm-hmm. We definitely needed to do that. We were maxing out already without even implementing the online testing. So we have put in a request for that. There is a cost for that, but we'll bear the cost. And they supposedly had approved the request and made the change on that end. We've got something on this side, perhaps in this building, they think, that might be keeping it from working, functioning fully. So they're, I think, checking into that. I think later this week, tomorrow perhaps, I think early tomorrow morning, they're going to come over and test it. But, yeah, we're definitely moving in that direction.
How are we with current staffing? Fully staffed?
We have one vacancy that we're waiting to fill. Other than that, we're in good shape.
All right, item 18.
18, executive session pursuant to Texas Government Code Section 551.0741 for discussion of personnel matters regarding the appointment, employment, compensation, evaluation, reassignment, duties, discipline, or dismissal of the executive director and the appointment, employment, reassignment, or duties of personnel acting on an interim basis in this position.
I would like for us to go into executive session.
That will work, Mr. Chairman. Will you just announce the time that we'll go into closed session, which would be
10:59 a.m. 10:59 a.m. Enter into executive session.
Thank you.
Hey, Denver.
Mics. Turn off your mics on, please. Texas Fire Commission will go back into open session at 11:19. Thank you. Okay, item 19.
Open session for further discussion and possible action regarding preceding agenda item.
Mr. Chairman?
Commissioner Gonzalez?
Thank you. After deliberation and executive session and further discussion related to the executive director's salary and compensation, I would entertain and move that we increase the executive director's salary by 5% to be effective immediately within this biennium.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Gonzalez, seconded by Commissioner Doster, to increase the executive director's salary by 5%. Any discussion? Effective immediately. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
I could comment. Thank you so much for
thank you.
Well deserved.
I appreciate the confidence you're showing me. I'll certainly do my best to live up to it. Thank you.
We're going to expect great things.
Absolutely.
And you always have.
And you should. Thank you.
All right.
We need to raise a testing fee to $56.
Let's hope.
All right.
Let's hope.
Item 20.
So moved.
Adjourn.
We have a motion by Commissioner Doster, seconded by Mr. Stillman to adjourn. Any discussion?
Don't forget to give your documents to your interview doctor.
Yes.
All in favor for adjournment?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Commissioners. Appreciate
thank
you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, David.
You're going to want me to come to every meeting now.
Absolutely.